Cavern Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. It's another summer day, although it's not as hot as it's been the last couple of days. I heard the guys earlier going, man, how hot it is. It's like it's 86, it's 87. Come on, you guys are from the South. This is temperate. I mean, this is mild. But it's a nice day. Welcome in to the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Ferg, how you doing today?
Doing all right. Doing well.
It has been a busy time. I mean, This is a much busier end of June than I can recall in quite a while as far as, especially Auburn news.
Yeah, a peculiar set of circumstances for basketball last night, obviously with – bringing in European players with Montas, signing officially earlier this week, and then the Narcisse Ngoi stuff last night that I'm sure we'll get into. And then on top of that, Auburn football is on one of its best recruiting heaters ever. We did a story, AU Nerd, who does recruiting for us at the Observer. He looked it up. He believes that in the modern era of recruiting, in times you can go back and look at databases, This is the most commitments Auburn has had at the end of a month of June ever, period. And I know things have changed because you get into a situation where
the most, all right, hit me again, I'm most, sorry, sorry mo- about that
my most phone, commitments yeah. Auburn's got 24 commitments right now. That's the most they've ever had at the end of June ever.
I don't doubt
like
that
not
at
even
all.
Because until, everything's getting accelerated
until the last decade. You didn't have everybody signing in December the way.
And
you
it's
do
a
now.
Different set of circumstances, but last year when obviously you were in the same spot of getting a lot of your work done, they had six commitments at this point. And so it's just kind of night and day. So because of that, you've constantly had just a bunch of different bits and pieces of news on top of, okay, you've got looking ahead to football season, looking ahead to basketball season. It's been, SEC opponents for basketball get finalized this week. Get a lot of stuff going on with football as you get closer and closer to media days and all that. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a very fun and very busy off season. I am looking forward to being on vacation next week. To get a break. But I will say there have been plenty of times, in the decade plus that I've been doing this, we get to this point of the year and you're just like, what are we going to talk about?
Phil, absolutely.
Haven't had that problem once this month, and that's pretty cool.
No, I think next week is a perfect time leading up to the 4th. I think the bulk of the news
should be
is taken care of. I mean, we'll go ahead and jump in and talk some basketball here. I mean, because everybody had been waiting. When are we going to hear? When's it going to be official about Montas? Was it coincidental or not that it was on the day that the NCAA announced the 5-for-5 with the age, and then that schools could either use prior or the current rules? I thought it probably wasn't coincidental. I think they've been working things out, correct, making sure everything was right. They announced that. It's announced, and you can either use the previous rules or the upcoming rules.
Yeah.
And Auburn opted, obviously, for the previous rules with Montas being 24.
Correct. And so here's the situation as I've kind of been able to gather it. Montas has been part of Auburn's team and really of their class for a long time. From what I heard when I was in Indianapolis, when they were up there at the Final Four and the NIT and all that, that was when that deal got done. That was when we're getting Montas, it's going to be him, meeting with folks. There's everybody in basketball is up there at that time. And so that was the case. And then it was, they had this guy, they're going to bring him in. It's just a matter of working through what that looks like in terms of eligibility. Because there was talk about, is he going to be eligible? Auburn was very confident throughout the process that he would be eligible.
Yeah. How much eligibility
do you have, and what process do you have to go through to get that? Obviously, with the 5-5 coming into place and the way that sets up, that makes sense. And then, you know, he gets makes a public commitment, so to speak, last month when Draft Express broke the news that he was coming to Auburn. Mm-hmm. I think he's been the guy for quite some time. I mean, I remember back right as soon as the portal window opened. And like I said, they had, you know, they were doing this while they were still in the NIT run, Auburn was going to get him. Auburn was going to get him. That was going to be the landing spot. So, yes, not a coincidence at all. I have been told by a couple of sources with the program that he is expected to be here this weekend. That he's coming over and getting everything set up and going. And Auburn's supposed to be off from practice, I believe, next week, or at least most of next week.
That makes sense.
When they come back, mm-hmm. they should have a full complement of players, because not only do you have Montas over, they expect to have Narcisse Ngoy over, and obviously what happened last night throws a surprise wrench into things.
Yeah. That was a surprise.
It was a surprise to everyone involved. I saw something not too long ago from somebody who covers the Clippers and said Narcisse Ngoy was not expecting to get drafted last night.
Yeah, and it was a surprise to him and his agent.
Yeah, and so so last night, in case you don't know, 57th pick, so like four picks left in the draft, Narcisse Ngoy gets drafted by the Clippers. Immediately, anybody who was covering the draft said this is a stash candidate. In years past, it's been going on for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
You can draft a European player and you have his draft rights, and then whenever you want to bring him over, he's got to make a contract with you.
Right.
You've got his rights. That's been going on for a long time. The difference now is that those guys are now eligible to play American college basketball.
Right.
If they have that eligibility, if they've never declared for the draft. Under the NCAA's new rules, if you declare for the NBA draft, you're done.
Right.
Obviously, that's a new rule now, because Montas would have been a guy that would have been done already because he has declared for the draft a couple times. And obviously, you've had other guys declare for the draft, stay in and all that.
We'll get into a little more of that, because I still feel like it would be much better for all involved to allow players to declare for the draft and still be eligible to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, we can get into that a little later.
And figure that out. So it's a very unique set of circumstances that allow Narcisse Ngoy to become drafted while still being eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And basically and this has been a rule in the NBA for a while, if you turn 22 before the start of the next season, you are automatically eligible to be drafted. You don't have to declare. It's very similar to the concept of guys who are out of eligibility in college. They don't have to declare necessarily they're going to go into the NBA draft. They're going to be drafted. There's really
in baseball, it's 3 years out of high school or 21. Once you're 21, yep, you're eligible.
And so you don't have to declare for it. You're just able to be drafted. And the NBA has this rule in place, so more international guys can get stashed. More international, mm-hmm. It's just more access to international guys. You can go get a younger international player and then see what you want to do with them, if you want to deal with their rights or whenever you want to bring them over. So Narcisse never declared for the NBA draft. He signed with Auburn in March. They expected Auburn expected to have him. He gets drafted. And again, like I said, it was a surprise to a lot of people involved. Late last night, I was able to get up with his agent, and his agent said he fully intends to honor his commitment to Auburn. And then Narcisse pretty much says the same thing this early this morning, mm-hmm. on social media. Got to remember, he was in France. He's still in France. It's a pretty big time difference. When he got drafted last night, it was like 4 a.m. over there, so a little different. But it's a weird set of circumstances, and it's different from, hey, this guy, got picked by an NBA team and then later decided to come back to college basketball.
Right.
It's different. Everyone's going to have their different opinions on that, but it is different than what a Charles Bediako did. It is different than what an RJ Lewis was trying to do.
And this is not something that was initiated by the college team either, trying to get him eligible. See, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
It's the NBA team trying to get a player that they can get later on.
Yep.
So
they expect to stash him. They expect to have his rights. Now, again, it was such a surprise move. There was some stuff this afternoon that claimed that the Clippers are going to continue to have conversations with him and kind of lay out a plan of what they want to do. But yes, basically, I mean, you know, he's got to get here, right? But mm-hmm. he has said he's planning on being here. What this really does, I think, more than anything else, is just it's kind of a stamp of approval on getting a guy like Arnautović Ngoy, because an NBA team thought it was worth drafting, like some capital to get mm-hmm. him, even though they knew that he probably would.
Yeah,
not
they traded
play.
With the Hawks to get the pick,
and it's a crazy thing. I was looking at this because I had a question that comes out in the mailbag tomorrow at the Observer about like what maybe the 27 draft looks like for Auburn guys. I found this really interesting. Of the 30 picks in the second round, 23 of them were guys who were college seniors. So they were done. Like, it was just mm-hmm. they used a ton of those picks. And there were some international guys like Ngoy. But, like, when you look, there are, like, most teams that use second-round picks last night were basically like, we're getting guys we can play right now. We're getting guys that we can put into our plans right away, get the two-way deals and do that. So for a team to say, we could take another guy like this, but instead, we're going to get a guy that we feel like we can steal him right now. Because if he goes to Auburn this season and does well, here we go. We've got a guy that...
He wouldn't go 57.
Yeah, maybe a guy who goes early in the second right. round, or maybe even better. Like, if he shows out this season, the Clippers got to kind of steal him mm-hmm. right here. And it's just a really good sign, I think, for Auburn. Now, it does change kind of the calculus and the timeline of, like, okay, what does that look like about, like, you know, how long Auburn's going to be able to have him or anything. But basically, it's, you know, it's not just Auburn who liked him. It's not just he is a guy that got on the radar of a lot of people, including NBA franchises. And that, I think, speaks very well to Auburn's talent evaluation and recruitment to go out there and get him. Because, you know, it wasn't like he was popular, but it wasn't like a ton of college teams were tearing down the door to get him.
Right.
He's a guy that I think Auburn identified pretty quickly. Brian Clomen, the new general manager, has deep Euro ties. They moved to go get him, and, you know, it looks like a better decision now just on the fact of, hey, some team thinks he might be NBA ready right now.
Well,
in the near future.
You mentioned it, and we talked about it in the last couple of days here just when we're looking ahead and talking with folks about the excitement about the upcoming year in basketball, is the job that was done by Stephen Perlin and staff, Brian Clomen and everyone, while they were competing in the NIT. I mean, because when the portal opened, Auburn jumped in and made moves for their targets, and they got the guys that filled exactly what they wanted pretty darn quickly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean,
that's not an accident or just luck either.
It was a lot of moves real quickly. And again, Montas, they signed Montas. They obviously signed Montas this week. He didn't get a commitment. He was the last commitment. But like, also, like I said, they were on that radar right. early there. Yeah, you make a lot of quick moves, and it was something when I talked to Stephen Pearl last month when I did a one-on-one interview with him for the Observer. One of the first things I asked him was, like, how much did it help to have Clomen already in place? And he was like, yeah, I mean, we got to just kind of coach basketball, mm-hmm. and he kind of ran the show, and it made a whole lot of difference, to the point where Auburn got to really hit a few weeks into the portal cycle pretty much done.
Yes.
While there were a lot of teams that were still negotiating, still trying to figure out, and then to the fact where, like, again, if you have these are good players, like, you know, I'm not saying that, but like, I think about like Kentucky getting Milan Momcilovic from Iowa State. He waited all the way to the deadline to figure out that he was not going to go into the draft, and then he pulled out, then becomes the biggest name available. Mm-hmm. Kentucky had to have him. I want to know how much they had to spend to get him.
No kidding.
Meanwhile, a team like Auburn got a lot of their work done and was able to kind of get it in quickly.
You go ahead and some of those early deals end up being bargains.
Yeah,
because the later it goes, and the more teams that are after those fewer players, the price goes up and up.
And I think in the case of Kentucky, they missed out on some guys.
Yes, they did.
And you know, because I think in the back of their mind, they still had guys like Milan and some others who were a vote. Now, I think, you know, we did a breakdown at the Observer earlier this week of pretty much every SEC team on the podcast, and I wrote about some of the last week. I think Kentucky ended up with a pretty good team, but like it was definitely touch and go there for Mark Pope. Whereas I think Auburn, it was just the kind of the decisiveness of the way that this, like, this roster makes sense. This roster is cohesive, and it got put together quickly, which is important because the quicker it gets put together, the quicker they can get them on campus together and get them ready to go. Obviously, next month when they go play in Greece for that preseason tour, you know, they will have spent a good bit of time already. Like they've been on the practice court for the last couple of weeks, getting ready to go. And obviously, the next week or so, if they can bring in, you know, Montas and Narcisse as they expect, get a full squad for about a month before you go out to Greece. That's huge because you did not have that luxury last year.
That is a huge step forward. I mean, everything has been so far ahead of, you know, obviously where it could be a year ago. So I think they're off to a very, very good start. We'll talk about the schedule that they'll face when we come back. Don't know all the dates, but we know who we play at home and on the road in conference, as the SEC announced that today. We'll talk about that and more after our first break here on the Thursday Drive. You can join us. Give us a call on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, sponsored by Skybar. So come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7.
For like a sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. But sticking with basketball, because today the Southeastern Conference announced the home and away matchups in conference play. And for Stephen Pearl in year two, it's a fairly challenging road schedule for Auburn. I mean, Auburn's got Alabama, LSU, and Ole Miss. They're the teams that the Tigers will play both home and away. Then at home at Auburn Arena, Auburn gets Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Mississippi State. On the road, Auburn will travel, in addition to the Alabama, LSU, and Ole Miss, Auburn will travel to Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas, Texas A&M, Vandy, and South Carolina. That's a pretty good road challenge.
Yeah, it is a good road challenge. I did find myself going through that list and saying, like, comparing the home and the road splits. I did find myself saying, I think you might have lucked out a little bit with some of the home. Like, if you could trade some of those road games for some of those home games, it could get really uneven. But
oh yeah. No, I don't think it's terribly lopsided.
Like, you're fine.
I mean, look, in this league, you're gonna have some tough places to go.
Anywhere to win on the road is tough. But when you tell me that this season Auburn gets Ole Miss on the road like usual, they get LSU, and I don't know what LSU is gonna look like.
Who knows?
Who knows what LSU looks like? I'm not expecting them to be world beaters.
No.
And then South Carolina, like, for three, mm-hmm. like, for a third of your road games to be very gettable like that on paper, I think that's a good spot to be in. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, because you don't want to go 1-8 or 2-7 on the road in conference.
No, you pick up a handful of them and you're really good.
If you can win three road games, you ought to finish over 500.
Oh, easily, yeah. And I think for Auburn, this schedule is a very good one, a very balanced one, and I'm very interested in seeing what LSU brings. Like, as we were really only holding on for who was going to be the rotating home and away
third
opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it ended up being LSU. So it was finalized today. We kind of knew it Monday night what everything was going to be because the rotations held up for the last few years. So yeah, I mean it's a good spot. You get that home game list again. You get some absolute, especially if they can stack some of these on Saturdays, there's some massive, massive matchups at
Florida,
home.
Florida, Tennessee.
Yeah, Alabama, obviously. Georgia back in. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, those are all going to be.
I don't know how good Georgia's going to be this year.
I am not high on Georgia at all. I was actually talking to Jordan Hill about this today, who covers Georgia. I'm not high on Georgia at all. It's like, Blue Kane's a good player. Yeah. I'm interested to see what Smurf Millender does as a starter.
I thought they would do a little more in the portal than they did.
And it's like,
and they lost. I thought they lost more than
their
they got
top. Back. Their top portal piece that they got is a guy who scored a lot at Penn State. But it was kind of all that Penn State had.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, not to be too much of a hater, but if you're telling me your top option in the front court's James Scott after what I saw from James Scott last season at Ole Miss, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about all that. They're just not very deep.
Right.
It's not a very deep team at all. And I would say of the players they had last season, I would say two of their top three are playing on other teams right now. Mm-hmm. And like that's a tough pill to swallow. Like Wilkinson, Jeremiah Wilkinson is going to be a loaded Arkansas team's starting point guard. And then Big Fellas, where did he end up? Is he at Louisville? Is he one of the guys who ended up going to Louisville?
I think so.
It's pretty tough spot. So, you know, Georgia's an interesting test case. Obviously, they were better than Auburn last season. They had that win.
Right.
They've been heading in the right direction. That last two seasons, though, you know, to end being on an 8-9 line and getting your doors blown off of you, you got to really bring something in this year to kind of solidify mm-hmm. yourself. And I just don't know if they have the roster for it.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, because, you know, Mike White's done a heck of a job since
he's been
there.
Coach. He is a really good coach. He gets a lot out of his talent. I just think when you look at, I don't know, like off the top of my head, I would say I like 12 rosters in the SEC better than Georgia's. And I think Georgia is ahead of Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and South Carolina, but that might be the only group that they're ahead of. Like Oklahoma, Oklahoma's the other one that kind of comes to mind. Like, I don't know. Like about the Georgia and Oklahoma are very similar to me where it's like they brought back some pieces. They lost some key guys. Maybe. This is a it's definitely an interesting thing because I think you can say that about maybe, 11 or say 12 through 16 in the league kind of all together or thereabouts. I think there's a clear number one, and I think you can say the next 10 teams, you could throw them out in any order, and I'd be like, yeah, probably.
The thing is, you get Florida at home.
You get Florida at home.
And then you've got Tennessee at home. Now, Tennessee.
And those are huge.
Yeah. Tennessee is another one that's going to be really interesting to see exactly. They lost a lot of guys, though.
They lost a lot of guys. But they might have the best portal offense in the country. Like they went all in.
And that's unusual for Tennessee.
And that's the thing with Rick is that they're banking on, they're going to play good defense. It's Rick Barnes. And like I kind of get it. Get it with them. They just they could not score consistently mm-hmm. last season. And it's consistently enough. I say that. They made the Elite Eight again. That's the Tennessee's going all in. Like Tennessee is very much
So you've got this those might two, be it for and of course, Bama at home. I mean, those are the other games you ought to be in. You know, if you're healthy and playing anywhere near what you think you should be playing, you ought to win those. So I mean, we're just looking at. I see 9 wins.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
3 road wins, 6 home wins. That's without winning any of those. And there's no way that I think Auburn's going to get swept by Florida, Tennessee, and Bama.
No.
At home.
No. And I think you look at some of those games that they got on the road next year that are like yes, historically it's tough to win at A&M for them. I'm not crazy about A&M's roster. Like I like it, but like I'm interested. I don't think
you're a Buckyball and you just wonder, you know, will they continue to
did you
surprise?
Realize that PJ Haggerty's there now?
No.
I don't know how he still has eligibility.
Wow.
He's going to take 40 shots a game at Texas A&M.
There'll still be others to go around.
I really like Vanderbilt.
I think Vandy's a team I think people sleep on. I don't know
always.
Why.
I think Vandy and Auburn, I think, you know, Vandy bringing Tyler Tanner back, and they've got some really good pieces. Like, I like that Vandy team. I don't think they're far and away better than Auburn, which makes that game in Nashville mm-hmm. be very, very interesting. So, I mean, I could say of the 18 games you have next season for Auburn, you could say around half of them you feel like you should win them, and then you get a handful of toss-ups and maybe a couple, like, maybe like two or three where you're like, okay, you're probably clearly going to be a dog in that game.
Oh, yeah.
that's not a bad spot to be in.
No, no kidding.
And I'm thinking about the ticket as well this year for Auburn. Like, you get Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama at home. Arizona's coming into town. Like, that's, you know, it ought to be a fun game, especially if Auburn.
Not like they have trouble selling tickets, I guarantee you. I mean, because I know family that has been looking and still looking and will continue to keep looking for those tickets to come available, and they're not there.
They're not coming. And even after last season, they're mm-hmm. just, they're not coming. And the ability's there for this team to bounce back, and I think they've got a really good schedule. And I like the non-conference schedule as it stands right now. It's going to be tough, but not as daunting as the last few.
It's fairer.
Years.
It is definitely it's fairer. It reminds me
of the non-con schedule from a few years ago, where it's like you have a big game or two,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll see whatever comes out in the
when you got a bunch of guys that are still learning to play with each other before you get into conference play.
That MTE is fascinating because I think, you know,
we're still looking for somebody if there's going to be a Hoopsgiving, right?
Yes. Still looking to see if there's going to be a Hoopsgiving. I would be if the event still happens, and I say every year that it feels like it's at the end.
Yeah.
Auburn will be in it, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
It's just could you find a high major team to come in, because you don't want to run that Chattanooga type of team again, knowing that you're already playing Middle Tennessee and Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
That Wisconsin game in Nashville is gonna be fun.
Yeah,
because Wisconsin was so unlike Wisconsin last season, the fact that they could score.
Yeah,
and
like we were talking about,
be really
Tennessee.
Fun. Yeah. they're really really fun. And look, Arizona, you know, you love that non-conference home winning streak. It is going to be on.
That's
super mega red alert.
Test, no question.
Yeah, but it's a good schedule, and I think it is a schedule prime for Auburn to be a team that surges back forward this season and could be, I think, at its ceiling. I think it could be one of those teams that makes a lot of noise in the SEC. Maybe not wins the title, but is a really good team, and see where chips may fall. I think I said this before. I think the ceiling of this team is going to be the 23-24 team, the team that lost to Yale, basically. But that team had some hot runs. They had some mm-hmm. tough losses. They got going really in the SEC tournament. They obviously had that. But that was a team that was really, really good when everything was clicking. And I think that team has that kind of potential in me, because you could take that step forward from a disappointing year last year, get everything going, and then you could bring a whole lot of that back, which obviously is what Auburn did a year later when they had the best season they ever had. I think the opportunity is there to have a similar kind of path. Maybe not Final Four good, maybe not SEC tournament title good, but like maybe potentially back to being one of the better teams in the SEC and maybe a contender in a year or two.
Yeah, I think they could be capable of doing it. Now the question is, you mentioned next year's NBA draft. How many of these guys do you think would be possibilities in next year's draft? Because now with the 5-for-5, there's the option possibility of being able to bring these guys. You know, so many of them are coming in as transfer seniors, but they're just transfer fours who will have that fifth year if they want it.
I think a lot of those second round guys that got drafted who were seniors in Wednesday night, were a lot of them were guys who couldn't come back. If you were a senior that went in the first round, you were kind of like superstar, senior. So that's the kind of good player. So when I look at it, it would be like, okay, how much does a guy like Kevin Overton, like, cause I think Kevin Overton's a second round pick. Like, I think Kevin Overton, one of the best shooters, he's a veteran. I think if he defends better this season, which he should have the more freedom to this year, I think he could be that kind of guy. I think a really good year for Tahad could get him into first-round conversations again, just because we saw four juniors get drafted last mm-hmm. night in the back of the first round. I think that's kind of his range. And then it's just kind of like, all right, how else do the rest of those guys adjust to high-major basketball? Because that's going to be the main question. If you were to tell me, and I write this in the mailbag for tomorrow, like, if you were to tell me that Buki Oboye was worth a draft pick next year, I said, I don't think that's surprising. It would be him proving that he could be what he was at Santa Clara and maybe cleaning up on the defensive end some with the fouls.
Yeah, but do you think Oboye and Narcisse both could be next year?
I think Oboye's traits are ridiculous. I mean, he's a 7'7 wingspan. He jumps really, really well. He runs the floor well. He's a guy that's so toolsy that I think an NBA team's going to look at that. If he can prove himself at the high major level mm-hmm. and say, we'll take that. Like, we will take that. We will take a flyer on that for sure. Aboye is that guy that, like, if he – Buki Aboye is the guy I'm most excited to watch this year on this basketball team. Wow. Just because I think the potential is through the roof with him, because he's got a bunch of stuff that you can't teach. Some stuff that's, like, really, really special. It's just a matter of controlling that, developing it, and getting it in the framework. I've said it before. I think he has the ability to be able to shoot like a Keyshawn Murphy from the perimeter if you give him more opportunities. He did a little bit of that at Santa Clara. But on top of that, he led the nation in D1. He dunks everything. He's an elite lob threat. He's a great shot blocker. And 7'7 wingspan. There's only few humans on the earth who have that at their disposal.
Yeah, that's exciting. All right, we'll talk some other things. We can get back to basketball, whatever you like. Give us a call and we'll talk whatever you want to here on the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive, 21 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, and John is up first on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Good day to you. So I was listening to the last segment, and, you know, we're here toward the end of June, and I'm getting excited for college basketball season. And I was thinking, you know, with the rise of college basketball, the rise of college baseball, I was trying to think, you know, gosh, what made these sports just so – because I think in the last 10, 15 years, these sports have exploded in growth. In the conference, men's basketball was always there, but like baseball, a lot of the Olympic sports have just, the size of them have just grown immensely. And I was thinking, you know, the birth of the SEC network, which I think started in 2014, being able to mic every field and being able to see all these games. I wonder what that's done for, I think that's maybe done more for the budgets of even men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, than maybe anything else, and I just wanted y'all's thoughts on that.
I 100% agree with you. I think that's the thing where it allowed more and more athletic departments to kind of expand their range and just say, all right, we're having this windfall of money. To that point, was bigger than anybody had to, you know, as a conference. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you were able to invest a lot more in those sports. I think about one of the biggest areas where they've been able to do that is coaching. I think Auburn took it, like, think about it, like, right after Auburn, after the SEC network launches, Auburn goes and hires an elite softball coach and becomes a contender there. And I think there's a number of sports where you've been able to see teams kind of get that kind of investment. And I think you're also right too, is that the fact that if you have any sort of cable or streaming subscription, you can pretty much watch any SEC event that you want to, all the way down to, and I say all the way down, it's no disrespect.
Just about any sport, any team, any sport.
All the way down to a volleyball, like, to you can watch tennis, you can watch, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I do think it helps. Like, it is definitely that exposure, and you're able to kind of recruit a wider branch of players because the SEC network's everywhere. And, yeah, you have that. Like, if I'm a volleyball player, or if I'm a softball player, I'm a baseball player, all that, I could be Ethan Bingaman's from California, right?
Yes.
Well, Ethan Bingaman's family can watch any Auburn game on TV rather easily because the SEC network has that kind of national footprint. So I think you're absolutely right. I think that the money and the exposure made it so easy. It's like, yeah, they've already had that in football, but it was a whole lot easier to do that in a lot of these other sports. And with men's basketball specifically, they kind of cracked down about a decade ago and said, all right, we got to be better.
The SEC decided they were going to be serious.
Yeah, they
really
needed,
really serious. I mean, look at the coaches in this league, and then have been over the last decade.
And there's so many conference, or so many sports now in the conference, especially now with Oklahoma and Texas in the league, where it's, you know, it's a, you're, if you're not the best conference, you're close to the best conference. It just makes sense for a lot of these places. Like, you might not be winning a national championship every year and everything, but
But you can do something like in SEC baseball, you can be a team that finishes 11th in the regular season and win the College World Series.
And win, I mean, yeah, win the national title.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
The talent and I think the competitiveness, you're not seeing as much of just one team dominating for years and years and years. I mean, it's Alabama. You know, we're not far removed from Alabama's dominance, but even Georgia is struggling. You know, with Nick Saban gone, to you know, the expectation was, all right, now it's Kirby's turn and they're going to dominate the conference. No, the league has too much money, too many resources,
yep.
And I think there's too much pride in just saying, all right, we're going to let that happen.
And the portal has just made it. There's,
oh, you're
there's
right.
So many different more ways to build a roster. But I'll also say this. I mean, what's the toughest competition for the SEC in terms of a conference? It's the Big Ten.
No question.
Right? The Big Ten may have at the top of the top of the heap, they might have a little bit more success right now in football. They've definitely won several the last few national titles.
Yep.
But when you think about it, they've got a really good basketball conference. They did just won the women's basketball national title and all that. But then I start thinking about the depth. Baseball, softball, all those spring sports. The fact that SEC gymnastics is a beast unto itself. That volleyball has gotten that way as well. Soccer as well. It's just there's just so many more sports in that depth that like you, it's really not compared. Like you compare it to any other league, top to bottom, I think they're either not going to be as good as you in football, or if they are as good as you in football, they're not going to be as deep in you in all these other sports. Like Big Ten baseball, okay, what? They're going to send what? A couple teams maybe to relevance? SEC, it's everybody.
And I was thinking about it from a facility standpoint, just one more quick point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder, absent, you know, SEC Network, what capacity is at Plainsman Park 12 years later? And something I was thinking about the other day, just with facilities like this and an arms race, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, before Jane B. Moore Field, didn't softball play at that softball complex out South College?
Out Wire Road. Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's where it was.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking it was the softball fields back.
Well, no. The ones out across the interstate. Maybe there were tournaments there. I don't know. I don't know that Auburn played there. Maybe they did,
okay.
But you're right. They didn't have. I mean, everything is so centrally located now. It's great. I mean, I remember years ago when there was talk of trying to move Plainsman Park because they didn't think there was room for it. And now, I mean, look, you're packing nearly 10,000 in for a super regional. So it is. It's one of the few universities where you can go and you've got football, basketball, baseball right there all together. So many of them, you have to, you know, travel a good distance, sometimes away from campus, to get to the fields.
And last point, and I'm gone. Am I right in that even in the 90s, Plainsman Park at some point didn't even have on-site restroom facilities or something like that?
No, you're absolutely right. Back when I was doing play-by-play in the 80s and into the early 90s, no. You had to go over to the Coliseum. Fans, press, teams had to go to the Coliseum to use the restroom. That's right. It was a big deal when we went from wooden bleachers to aluminum stands and actually got a press box. So no, the transformation has been just amazing.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate the call, John. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Yeah, it is. It really is amazing. The explosion of all in so many different sports, and now Justin, I mean, with the situation that we're in right now with NIL, I mean, NIL is something that right now there's no reins right now. I mean, there are folks trying to come up with ways of putting a hold on it, but while you have the constant increases in NIL year after year, I wonder how much more. John was talking about facilities. I mean, it's great. Auburn and I think Auburn, John Cohen's done a great job of adding to the amenities of the facilities that Auburn has.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting tougher and tougher to do that because you have to sink so much of your resources into getting and hopefully retaining players.
Yeah, revenue sharing and then the NIL component on top of it for sure. I do think that's where it is impressive when programs are able to say, all right, we're still doing this. We're still going to try to not just be...
It's not just expansion the way it used to be.
No, it's having the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
It's having the bells and whistles, so whenever the end zone gets done at Auburn, that's going to be a big part of it. And then, you know, on top of it is, like, I think Auburn deserves credit here. Again, everybody wants to be more successful in a lot of the other sports, especially the major sports, but I think Auburn deserves a lot of credit is that they're still trying to expand. They're still trying to innovate and get better with their – upgrade their facilities on top of the fact that it's not just let's sell everything out into having the best football roster possible, the best men's basketball roster possible, the best, you know, whatever. You look at the spring, Auburn had a lot of really good programs and all in a really good positions. And so there's something to be said of trying to be well-rounded like that because you have the resources, you have the capabilities to do so. And it shows that you'd love to win championships in your main sports. Obviously anybody would, but you're not going to take everything else out in service of that. And I think there are some schools, including ones in the SEC, that can fall victim to that sometimes where they don't have the depth of a place like Auburn.
No, you're absolutely right. Good stuff, John. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio. We've got a few minutes left to go here in hour number one. We probably can go ahead and get into this. I didn't want to jump into something that's going to take too long and we'll have to stop. But Major League Baseball, Ferg, I don't see any way that we have a season next year. I would like
for the Atlanta Braves to start playing well again because this might be the last time we get to watch them for a while. So
the proposals from Major League Baseball to the Players Association are absolutely going. There's no way they're going to get okayed today. Major League Baseball saying that they want no contracts over 5 years for players that change teams, 6 years for players that stay on the same team. They're still pushing for a salary cap and a floor, and the Players Association has always been against that. I mean, they're just, it seems like they're trying to go ahead and just have a stoppage next year.
It's so hard, I would imagine, in 2026 to be like, okay, we have the oldest professional sport in this country. And now, after 100-plus years of doing it the way we've always done it, and I know there's been tweaks and changes along the way, but, like, now it's a salary cap league. Like, I find that so hard to believe. Like, I don't know how you would do that. Like, I really don't know how you can easily go to that because you have so many players making so much money already, right? Like, you know, today is there was something – it wasn't today. It was like somebody had posted something today. It was like, you know, not too long. It was like the Juan Soto deal being like, what, 13, 14 years? It's like, yeah.
Yeah, well, you had Bobby Bonilla's deal years ago that
it's
were, you
just,
know,
it's just,
deals of longer than a decade are not uncommon at all.
And I, for one, you know, and this is easier for me to say because I cheer for a baseball team that is one of the richer ones and one of the more successful ones. But I do like the concept of, like, the fact that, like, not every team is created equal. And, like, I think there's some value to that when a team like the Rays for so long or some of these other teams, like the Brewers right now, like, find a way to win without
the
it.
The Royals have.
I mean, yeah, yep. and success gets defined differently. I feel like college football misses some of that as well, where it's like, well, we got to make the playoff or it's pointless. It's like, well, some of y'all aren't built for it, like, you know? And, like, not to compare everything – to European soccer, but that's a lot how European soccer works. It's like, you know, like they're over there, they have the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and stuff like that. But it's like, if I'm a team like the Brewers there, it's like, I know I can keep myself alive and be really competitive and fun. And like my fan base buys into it, have been like, you know what? If we ever get a really awesome player, we know we're not keeping them, but we're going to turn that into a lot. And like being able to do that, And I don't know how you go from that to saying, okay, now we need to be like the NBA and the NFL, where it's parody all the way through. It's so hard to – it's going to be so hard to create that parody because it feels so artificial in a sport like baseball where – it's a very weird sport.
The Players Association has so much power, too. I mean, they have. And look, we talked about it a little yesterday. I had a call yesterday about sort of about this, about what happened to baseball. I mean, it was America's pastime in the 50s and 60s. But then
the NFL.
Professional football, when the NFL and AFL merged and,
when the NFL got their act together.
Oh, yes.
From the top down.
And the NBA was just, that was something that was going on. And it has become a huge, huge sport now.
I mean, think people who are younger than me, and this didn't happen when I was growing up, but like I think people may find it hard to believe that like the NBA Finals used to be on tape delay.
Yes.
Like that is insane to think about.
What I mean. It's like you had to read about them tomorrow, in the paper about what happened last night.
If you wanted to watch an NBA game, like I know my dad talked about this growing up, when you had to watch an NBA game, you got two. Whatever Sunday game you got, and it was going to be like you're probably going
to
watch this.
Maybe if your local station decided to carry it because they knew there weren't many people watching.
It's like you are going to get the Celtics and you're going to get the Lakers, and it's like that's it.
You might get the Sixers when Chamberlain was playing or something like that. But I mean, that's
crazy. But it's crazy to think about that. And for baseball, it was you had this kind of powerhouse. And the NFL. I think the NFL and then the NBA later, although the NBA has got its issues now, especially with the way it's run, where it's like they kind of got their act together and got going, and it feels like MLB's kind of been fighting against itself for the last decade or so.
They absolutely have, and they've had a couple of stoppages which have really hurt them, and it's taken them a while to try to get back. And I think baseball has been building back and gaining some more popularity. And another stoppage,
it's
going to be critical.
My brain cannot comprehend the NFL ever having a lockout.
No,
it would never even remotely happen. And if it did, it would hurt its status as the number one sport in America.
So that's what baseball's staring
never,
at.
And they're never right going to get to that point.
Yep. Hey, the music's about done. We're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Plenty for us to still get to, and love to hear from you. So come on in and join us in hour number two.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Another nice looking day, a pretty pleasant, actually, end of June day. It's not even in the 90s. Just wait. I looked ahead the next week. Where are you guys heading next week?
We're heading to this weekend. We're going.
I mean, you don't have to give us details.
We're going to Black Mountain.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah. You mentioned that last week.
We looked at this way. It's like the high when we're there.
That's
going like
to be
low
nice. 80s. Yeah, it's going to be really nice. Yeah, it usually is. It's pretty temperate there.
Yeah, and you're in the mountains. You get some elevation there. That'll help. Mm-hmm. And then next weekend we're going to Blue Ridge. So with my family.
Okay, well,
so
mountain time.
Yeah, it's very mountain. It's very very mountainous. We did the beach earlier.
Right.
This summer. So yeah, we're doing mountains. Like we had.
Yeah, you did the beach when it was cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
good.
Was perfect. Yeah. So I think we're hitting it pretty well. But yeah, like I am looking forward to. Like it hadn't been terrible here, but it is going to be a little bit cooler up there, and I'm looking forward to that.
It is going
to
be hot here over the next leading up to the 4th. I mean, it's like the highs were like 93, 94, 95. They're like climbing all the time.
And
but
that's feels
what
right to me. Yeah, I don't love it, but like it's what it's supposed to be.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so we're heading south. I've gotten a little sun already, so I'm not expecting to get
burnt. Are y'all there through the 4th?
No.
You're getting out of there before
the
4th.
We always. See, all right, so.
That's what you do.
We time it. All right. Tomorrow's my birthday. We usually leave right around or after that, and that's like it's 8 days before the 4th, and it gives us time for like 4 or 5 days at the beach and get out before the crowds and the prices go up.
Oh yeah, the prices for
starting the night of the 2nd, all of a sudden, man, it's amazing how steep things
get. There were a few times growing up when we lived I lived an hour north of Fort Walton, and it was like, for the 4th, we would go to the beach to see fireworks. And like, that's a very cool thing.
You can drive down and back.
Yeah, but even then, it's like the people, like the crowds that are insane. Yeah, see, like, we did it a few times where we're like, yeah, we're not doing this again.
We'd go to Pensacola and see the Blue Angels, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something,
yeah.
As a matter of fact, Kathy wants to do while we're down there. I think they're flying on Tuesday. I've
only ever done that once. Yeah. A lot of fun.
Yeah, so we would do that, but we were 45 minutes north of Pensacola.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you
can't drive down and back. That's a luxury.
It's a day trip, you know.
That's a luxury that, like, I will say, like, I took it for granted when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I would work the pharmacy I worked at growing up, especially in the summer, we were only open for a few hours on Saturdays. Like, I'd get off at 1.
Oh, yeah. Close at midday or so on Saturday?
We'd close at 1. I'd get in the car, and I could be standing on the beach at Okaloosa Island by, like, 2:30 at the latest.
Yeah.
And it's like, I took that for granted way too easy. Considering now, like, every time I want to go to the beach, I'm like, all right, it is going to be 4 hours before you get there. Like, I hope you're ready for it. I know somebody not too long ago, somebody here, was telling me, yeah, we did a day trip to Destin. I was like, what? Like, you spent 8 hours of that driving.
When did you wake up and leave? If you want to really spend.
You woke up in the middle of the night and went. Like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, so it is, that was something that I do miss that part about living in South Alabama. And yeah, where y'all were, especially, like, that's even closer to
get
there.
Yeah, we were right on the Alabama Florida line.
Yeah. So we were 20 minutes north. So you could get there pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, yeah, no kidding.
I had plenty of folks growing up who would drive down across the line to get lottery tickets. We were close enough for all that. Yeah, we were very much close enough for that.
Well, it was like
if you could buy tobacco a year earlier. That was the other thing people did when I was in high school.
When I was there, it was 3 years later before you could buy any alcoholic beverages. It was 21 in Alabama and 18 in Florida.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know it was 18
in Florida.
But. Oh, yeah. And there was railroad tracks separating Alabama and Florida. I mean, that's...
What's the town that you cross over?
Flemington.
Oh, it is Flemington. Uh-huh. I didn't realize. I guess I forgot.
If you're 29 and 31, 29 and 31 run together. 29 goes south to Pensacola. 31 goes on west of Mobile.
Yeah. Also, yeah, shout out Florala. The most appropriately named city in the world.
Absolutely.
Flemington
was the next best thing they could come up with. The first three of Florida, the last two Alabama, and TON for town. You know, yeah. that's what they did. That's our way of reminding you there will be no drive next week. So we will be back after the 4th with everybody hopefully back from a little refreshing time.
They timed it up perfectly. I didn't even know. Like, last week you told me that y'all were taking a break. And I was like, that's great because I'm not going to be here next week. So it worked out really well.
Well, I mean, I think it's also it looks like the perfect time. I mean,
ideal.
I think most of the news. If there's news next week, it's probably not good news.
Well, and then
stuff that happens this time of year, generally is off the field.
Got a little bit of that this week as well with the Duke Smith situation.
That's right.
And but yeah, the other thing too, again, we talked about it in the first hour, but we were digging in, like, the most commitments Auburn's had at this point in a recruiting cycle before. They're kind of done. I mean, there are a handful of targets still out there, like, the vast majority of their work is done. So even the recruiting news with the dead period, with no more visits and all that for a little while, like,
it's gonna slow.
It's just naturally gonna slow down, and that's good. And now at this point, you're got pretty much all of your roster ish stuff in basketball kind of taken care of, and that's good because you get that, you get a little bit of a break, and then by the time you're like, all right, we need something to talk about, hey, we need
come
something
back
to get
from
into.
The 4th, and we're about to hit media days, and practice gets started right after that.
And I'm fascinated to see how media days goes. They've never been in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested to see what the turnout is for that. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of intrigue with Auburn just because of how new everything is.
Oh yeah, no question about it. Let's go. All right, we didn't talk any football at all except for just that the number of commitments Auburn's got. The last few commitments. I mean, again, it's been a while since I've seen such an immediate response after official visit weekends. Mm-hmm. This year, I mean, after each one of the weekends, it's almost been like, man, there's a handful of kids that are ready to jump in the boat right now.
Yeah.
And same thing happened.
Well, you want to get your spot. Like, because I think you're going to lock in if you're a coaching staff and you want to focus and you want to be doing your job in terms of coaching because you want to have a good season and establish that proof of concept. And so by the time November, December rolls around, it's like, all right, we kind of know what we need to go out and get in terms of the portal. So if you want a spot, you better be coming in right now. And that's why it was so crucial for them to get all this work done. It's great. Now you got to keep them all on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
Easier said than done.
And you're not going to keep every one of them. No. And you're going to try to be flipping some kids from other schools.
Correct. But, you know, the vast majority of your class being done at this point, mm-hmm. in the game, that's so ideal because you're talking about a fall where, yes, you're still recruiting, but it's not as big of a priority as it has been in the past just because the calendar's changed so much.
I mean, and look at the 24 players that Auburn has. They have a pretty good team. I mean,
yeah.
As a quarterback, a couple of running backs, three receivers, a tight end, four offensive linemen. You've got defensive linemen, linebackers, defensive backs, corners, safeties, and a kicker.
And a really good kicker. It's a really good balanced kind of group, and it's you know, top 10 class right now. It'll be tough to kind of keep that in just because of the numbers game. But, you know, you talk about this is very much a team that's projecting to be a top 15 class, one of the top handful of SEC classes. I mean,
I think
to do that before you've even played a game, that says a lot about this staff.
It absolutely does because there isn't any proof of concept yet on the field. But I think quite a few of these guys just look to me when I watch the video of some of these guys, they look better than where they're ranked right now. I think there's a potential that quite a few of these guys could move up. I think
I don't know how Mison Johnson Cook's not a five-star. That's the one where I'm like, by far, like, what am I missing? Like, what am I missing here where this dude runs like a deer and he's 6'3 and he's 230 and I don't know what else you would want in a running back. But, yeah, there are a handful of those guys who are just like, I really like them.
Deshaun Hall, I think, has a chance. My goodness, that's an athletic big kid that can run.
Yeah, he's got a lot going for him. There's some three-star guys. Like the kid they got, the kid they just got from Selma.
Cedric
Simmons, did you see his numbers last season? I did not know
that. Yeah.
He had 2,100 receiving yards last year. He led the state in catches, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. He had like 21, I think, receiving touchdowns or something like 21, 22. Really impressive kind of kid like that. And Auburn's got a pretty good track record with, like, especially those slot guys just kind of finding value. There. Obviously, Deshaun Spencer was a good example of this in this last class. It's just I like the fit there a lot. And then I like some of the DeMatha kids that are three stars or those DMV guys that are three stars. It's like, I know the level of competition they play, and I see their offer list, and I'm like, that's not a garden variety three star. It's just not.
And that offer list, that's something, again, I've harped on that for years. But, I mean, I love seeing who is interested in these guys. And you're going to see the same and more of those schools coming after some of the guys that are committed to Auburn right now. But Auburn's already beaten out, you know, Alabama and Georgia and Texas and Penn State and Notre Dame. Among schools for the players that they have committed right now.
Yeah, it's tremendous work for sure. And then I also like, we've talked about it recently on the Observer podcast. I really like also the fact that it's not just pure star chasing.
No,
they've got some three-star guys. They've got some guys who have four-digit rankings in their class, and it's just like, no, we just like them. We think they fit,
and they like them now. It's not. I mean, when you're taking some of those guys in November.
Yeah,
you know, then you're thinking, man, we're reaching. We got to try to get some spots.
And those guys can turn out to be something great. I mean, I always say Daniel Thomas and Roger McCreary are the two ultimate examples of that.
Oh yeah. There's nothing against
wrong
those
with
guys.
But it's like there's something to be on it right now.
When you're after players right now,
the guy they just got that has been down between them and Jack State, and it's like you look.
Yeah, the DB.
Yeah, you look at his stuff, and it's like, knowing what I know, and kind of see and just kind of going off of the past. If Charles Kelly thinks you've got a
defensive back,
and like that's the thing is, he wouldn't be nearly the highest rated guy at Jacksonville State. Like and so I think that was very much a situation where Auburn got in on an evaluation and said, okay, we like him a lot, and I mean, Charles Kelly really liking you is a pretty good stamp, especially for a defensive back.
Well,
it's like when Kevin Steele used to reach for three-star in-state guys or low-rated in-state guys at Auburn. It's like, that's a pretty good track record. Like, they had a really good run of those guys where you look up and say, well, I mentioned just a couple of them, Daniel Thomas, Roger McCreary, Jalen Simpson. Or not Jalen Simpson. Yeah, Jalen Simpson. Yeah. Is it Jalen Simpson?
Nehemiah Pritchett.
Nehemiah Pritchett is who I'm thinking. Simpson from Georgia. Yeah. Yeah, it's like guys like that. It's like, if you see something like that, there's a reason for it. It's not – and like you said, you don't go get those guys right now.
No, I mean,
because you have to.
You don't, yeah, you absolutely don't have to take those guys unless you feel like we better get these guys now because they're going to be noticed by someone before too long. And we will see, but just from what we saw this spring and how things went for some of the players that Alex Golish had at South Florida, I feel like I like his evaluation or his staff's evaluation ability. They have found some players that we saw out there this spring that there's no question in my mind they're SEC players.
Yeah.
That were at South Florida last year.
The one that gets me that I don't think people think of, and like they obviously people know about him because of who he is, but it's like people forget Alex Golish did not recruit Byron Brown to USF. That was a kid they inherited.
That is right.
From Jeff Scott and that dismal program that they had
barely win. I mean, barely won two games a year.
Like they had four wins there. I think I think they only beat one FBS.
Four wins in 3 years.
I think they only beat one FBS team the whole time he was there. But yeah, he was a guy they inherited and just were like talked to him, saw him, and said, "No, he's the type of quarterback we want in our system." And obviously, 3 years later, you know, 3-4 years later, he's now at Auburn and being talked about as one of the best returning quarterbacks in college football. That's evaluation. There's a number of those guys like that really, really stand out. And I also like their ability. I think we've seen, especially certain positions, to be like finding value and finding, you know, just like and like not backing down from fights at times. Like they went after Deshaun Spencer hard.
Yes, indeed.
Until the very end, and he was going to go to Duke, right?
Deshaun Hall was going to Penn State. I mean, people thought that Cedric Simmons was headed to Alabama.
How about this one? This is the one I wrote about him last week at the Observer. USF flipped Jeremiah Koger from Wake Forest. Like a rare – Wake Forest isn't awesome, but like,
that's
decent
still,
ACC
still
school.
That's still a power four school.
And it's like that's – especially the wide receiver. A lot of these guys we mentioned wide receiver, it's just like they've got the touch because, I mean – if you look at the numbers of this offense, and if you're like, why wouldn't you want to play wide receiver in this offense? Mm-hmm. Like, look at what the – I had a – what was the
– wouldn't you want to play period in this offense?
I had a number –
running back, tight end.
I had a number – I can't remember what it was, but it's like if you go from 2020 UCF to all the way to 2025 USF, so the six teams that he's been a coordinator, like it's something like every one of those teams has had at least four guys with 20-plus catches and 400-plus yards. And it's like, that would be the best Auburn receiving core in like 20 years if that happened. Like, so, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you want to play in that offense? Even if you're not the guy, you can have opportunities to become the guy pretty quickly. And he's got a great track record for that.
Oh, that's no question about it. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Brian, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle 7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive, Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, before we get to the phones, let everybody know what's been going on with the Observer, what you got coming up here in the near future.
Yeah, so I am going on vacation next week, but if you're an Observer subscriber, we're going to have plenty of stuff on the website. We are turning it over to all of our contributors. So this week on the site, I would say mailbag out tomorrow. Today, I did a quick explainer of the Narcisse Ngoi situation because it's kind of confusing.
It is.
If you can't follow all that. Let's see. We had a recruiting breakdown story that you can check out as well. Got some fun. I did an in-depth look at Auburn's cornerbacks because that's the one position group where I'm like, oh, right. Let's see what this looks like this year.
There are a lot of guys.
Yeah, a lot of guys and a lot of question marks right there. Got that podcast-wise this week. Dan and I had a podcast earlier this week that you can check out. And then if you're a subscriber, I did a podcast with my friend Nicole Auerbach of NBC Sports talking some big picture college football stuff.
That's the recent one, right?
Yep, it came out today. And then, so yeah, real quick, next week we've got Henry Patton's doing a breakdown of Tahat Pettiford with this new look Auburn roster. Our guy AU Nerd's got a really interesting look at how you're supposed to – he's got a new way to evaluate talent on rosters in the transfer portal age. Got some numbers in there that I think are fascinating to look at. Justin Lee's going to do a column for us as well. And then Dan's got the ship for both of the podcasts next week. I'm giving him free reign. Just let him go to work. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, auburnobserver.com, sign up there. I'm going on vacation, but we will still have the usual newsletters and podcasts next week, because if you're paying for it, I'm not gonna skip a week. Like, you know, hey, you're paying
your hard earned money
for this, so we're gonna make sure you get worth your while. So right. auburnobserver.com.
Great stuff. All right, let's get back to the drive hotline. We've got calls holding, and Brian's been hanging on for a while. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Ferg. Happy Thursday to you.
Yep.
You know, putting aside the current landscape of the fact that five stars cost you a ton of money. So let's put that aside. But, you know, listen, everybody loves five stars. It's great. When's the last five star that Auburn's had that's truly been like a monumental once-in-a-lifetime like player?
In football?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. I'm circling back through my head, and I'm like, I'm having a hard time.
Cam would be the high school signee.
Here, I'm gonna look this up real quick. This is a really good question, because, like, you know, the last few to come to mind for all different reasons didn't necessarily really pan out like you would think. Derrick Brown.
Derrick Brown,
I think would be the one that you would say definitively, you know, All American, top 10 pick, you know, SEC Defensive Player of the Year. That's the one. But yeah, the rest of the track record is not so great here in the last decade or so.
But to think of the cost of what five stars cost right now.
How much money would Derrick Brown make in today's market is what I want to know. Good grief.
So the point in me asking that, and I didn't know the answer. I mean, I knew Derrick's great. That's a great Berg. That's spot on. I just know, looking through the list in my head, like, it's been a while, and we haven't had many that have panned out in their true potential. Now, whether they do at other schools now, that's another story. But I guess my thing is, my point of all that is the fact that, you know, and Bill, I've mentioned this before, like, give me a talent evaluator that knows his stuff, and hell, give me the
hopefully they can help, that can develop some guys too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Give me a Tubbs team that could develop guys that we got. I mean, I think about the talent on those teams. A lot of those guys were switching positions. I mean, Carlos Dansby, one of my favorite Auburn players, was a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just think about the talent development we had in those years with Tubbs. And, you know, get me back to that. I mean, Auburn fans, I don't think, are greedy. We're not looking for, you know, playoffs necessarily every year, although the playoffs are different now. But, you know, get me back to that and development, and I don't care what the star ratings say, get me players that want to be here and want to play. I think that's the key.
I think that the Alex Golish and his staff, I've said this a couple of times this week, Justin, I think they're doing a great job of finding kids that want to be at Auburn.
Yeah, 100%. I mean,
and that's I don't think you take that lightly.
Yeah,
I mean,
he talked so much, and like a lot of coaches do, but you really heard it a ton in the spring. Like, the focus on building a culture and building a program instead of just building a team and building a roster. Like, that to me is where your difference is found. Like, are you finding guys that want to be here and want to play here? And I think in the past, Auburn has been able to find some of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being able to find more of them and stick to that is going to be the thing that I think defines this moving forward. And to Brian's point, you look at the college football playoff last season, you look at really the last couple of years, aside from the fact that Indiana just broke everything last year by winning the national title, there are so many different ways to build a championship contender now that it's not just get as many five stars as you can, sit on them, and you know, stack them as much as possible, and that's how you make it to the playoff. That's not how it works anymore, and I think that's a fun possibility for Auburn if you get the right people in place.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the time.
Good hearing from you, Brian. 334-321-1390. And Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. You guys talking about the Panhandle now that I live down here. I was on the bridge today from Fort Walton to Okaloosa Island. It took me back about 40 years ago. I was there for spring break. Young, very young guy with a guy. We weren't intoxicated or anything, but we came over the crest of the bridge, and the traffic was stopped. We had to slam on brakes and ended up rear-ending somebody.
Mm.
So, yeah. I thought about that today with all the traffic there, because I don't know if you guys know, but they're building a new bridge. I don't know if they're gonna keep the old bridge going one direction and the new bridge going the different direction, kind of like they did with the new bridge in Pensacola.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That makes sense.
Brought back memories of that. The wife and the son got to Barcelona this morning,
cool,
thankfully, which was
wow.
Good.
Yeah, that's quite the trip.
it is. They said they both bought those little neck pillows or whatever. Mm-hmm. I told them, you know, to defeat the jet lag, you gotta sleep, you know, when it, you gotta about what time it is where you're going and sleep during that time, because I've never had a problem with jet lag, and I had a 14-hour flight to Korea back in the late 90s. Ooh. But anyway,
yeah.
But you guys were talking about the Blue Angels. I have some customers on Pensacola Beach.
Right.
And I always look up and find out when the Blue Angels are going to be there so I can avoid it like the plague.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's going to be next. Yeah, that's going to be next week. So.
Right. And I've got it on my calendar because a couple years back, Casino Beach Bar and Grill, which is right there on the beach.
I'm sure you know where that is. I know.
Yeah. They had an issue with their dish machine, and I had to go check on it. And as soon as I got off of 98, to go to Pensacola Beach, traffic was
backed up. I bet. Yep.
I'm surprised I found a parking spot. I parked at a different place and had to pull my wagon out, take my tools with me because I had to walk because there was nowhere to park. So the Blue Angels. I avoid that like the plague, but
I don't have to be in the most crowded place to watch them. As long as I can see the sky, I think I've got a shot. You know, so we can be somewhere near.
Oh, well, I mean, you can probably see them if you're downtown.
Yeah.
You know, on I can't remember the name of that damn street.
Palo Fox.
But anyway, yep, there you go. Yeah, but and I guess the last thing, soccer tonight. I hate that it's so late, though.
Yeah, it is late. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the U.S. got it like hosting this tournament. They get the latest group because you got to play both of your group matches have to go off at the same time. I don't know how that got the 9 o'clock slot though. Like I know it's on the West Coast, but still, that's still not very fun.
Right. I mean, I was telling my uncle yesterday, and I was like, wait a minute. You know how ESPN and Fox and all those people dictate, you know, when college football teams play? You would think that Fox could have dictated when the U.S. team played, even if it was on the West Coast, you know, that they could dictate it. But I don't know. I mean, it's soccer, so I don't know if Fox, you know, capitulated. Or I don't know what they did, but, 9 o'clock, that's... I try to get to bed by 10, but I'll watch it. But anyway, like y'all guys reminiscing about the Panhandle of Florida, which I live in now, and you know, we're in the season now because I have to work down here and battle all this traffic. So, you guys get to come down, enjoy, and then go home.
Yep. Now I tell you what.
I grew up near there, so don't give me that.
And that's the thing too. Is like when we were talking earlier, when my wife and I went to Orange Beach earlier this summer, we went like in the sweet spot of like between spring break and before the summer crowd really got there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like that. Right. That's a good time. All right, right now, you know, God bless you if you're going down there. Like you just have to deal with it.
But we're getting out before the rush.
You're getting out before it gets really rough for sure.
Hey, Mitch wanted to let you know Patrick came by, got the mower, and if he's looking for that for the control part, I found it too. So if he needs it, I can tell him where he can get a replacement.
Okay, I will. He called me yesterday about lunchtime. I was in Pensacola and said that he came by and hung out with you for a little while and talked and everything, and again he said that your place is immaculate.
I can feel it when I get done, but it's nice when it is. So
right,
I'm proud of it.
Right, right. Well, I told him, was like, well, that's Cameron's niche. I mean, he does yard work, he does the drive, he's retired, and he hangs out with his grandkids.
That's pretty much it. That's exactly right. And we go to concerts.
I mentioned that too. So, all right, guys. Y'all have a great one.
All right, Mitch. War Eagle. Appreciate it. 334-321-1390. Boys got me a ticket to Paul Simon for Father's Day. So we're going to do that in a few weeks.
Where is he at?
Atlanta.
Nice. Yeah. Playing State Farm or where's he playing?
I think Chastain.
Chastain. Ooh, mm-hmm. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be a good time. Be a good time. I haven't been to a show in a while, and I'm gonna try to maybe go to some like at the end of the year. But
you didn't get tickets today?
No. my wife really wanted to go, and got into kind of the process, and it was like by the time we got through, it was like $350 pit tickets, and it was like
I
don't know about that much. But my let's see. Let me go back and think. My in-laws for I think it was their Christmas present. They're going to go see my father-in-law is going to go and my mother-in-law. They're going to go see AC/DC at Truist.
Oh wow,
that's in like September or something like that. So I want to know what that concert experience is going to be like in the year 2026.
Yeah,
should be great. Right. Should be great. But
it's
like,
going to be funny seeing how many old rockers what the old rockers look like now.
Yeah, that's. Because it was like, hey, we're going to go see, you know, it was the idea came up. It was like, we're going to see AC/DC. I was like, oh, cool. And then I was like, they're still touring. And then I thought about it like for more than 5 seconds. It's like everybody tours.
That's
like,
right.
Everybody tours. If the Eagles are still touring, anyone is. Even if
there's nobody left from the original band, they're pretty much touring.
I'm sure the Stones are doing something.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, yeah, if you exist, like if you're alive and making music,
you better be touring. That's how you make money.
That's 100% the only way you're going to make money now.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Still got about 20 minutes or so when we come back. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Thursday Drive.
U.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 21 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. We talked a little bit about the Auburn football in the recruiting sense. As we head toward the season, I know it's that time where you're doing positions and things like that. Ferg, what are the positions you're the most excited about on this team? There are two or three positions that I think, man, going to be really fun to watch and see a number of players.
I think I've said this before on here, but I'm really excited about running back. I just – the commitment to running the football that we've heard from Alex Golish and the staff, obviously Byron Brown's going to be a big part of your running game. But, like, you think about Jeremiah Cobb, Bryson Washington, Nakai Davenport, Tay Meadows, you're bringing back Omar Mabson. We'll see you about a guy like Alvin Henderson as well. There's just so much depth there. And, you know, this offseason when it clicked in my head, I was like, wait a minute, they have four guys that were RB1s last year in FBS. I was like, that is – you can make the argument, maybe not the most talented group, but could be the deepest running back room in the country after last year when Auburn had – 2.5 running backs for most of the season. It's a pretty fun shift. I like that group a lot. I really like the safeties as well.
Before you get off the running backs, that sort of leads me to something that I keep thinking about. What a great job, what a great salesman Alex Golish and his staff are to be able to bring in multiple players like that at a position. Because
and then you gotta do it in high school.
Yeah, I mean. Look. They continue to bring in receivers. Now, look, they're going to play quite a few of them, and they're going to play. Look, running backs. More running backs are going to play than used to. Used to be, you know, you'd have that one workhorse.
Yeah.
Or maybe
you're going to play. You're going to play about three or four. You're going to play about three or four at running back, and feel pretty good about it. I said safety, and I was like, I do like safety a lot. Inside linebacker though is probably going to be your position group that I'm like really.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's that group. If you get anything out of DeMarcus Riddick this year after the injuries he dealt with last season, like, you are looking at a loaded group.
How can you not look at him a little bit at the edge?
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking like especially when it is a clear get after the quarterback. Oh, you're not have to worry about him setting the edge.
Just pin your ears back and go get him.
Yeah, just go beat somebody with a speed move. Like, yeah, he's been a lot of fun. I think Elijah Melendez has all SEC type of potential. Sooner rather than later.
Juice Diaz
is a lot of fun, and then obviously Xavier Atkins. Oh. Xavier Atkins was an All-American, and like, I don't think he played anywhere near the cleanest brand of football last season. Mm-hmm. That's scary. If he's more polished and more locked in, I mean, it might not have the stats he had last season, but he could end up.
No, because I think I've got more guys that can make plays this year.
But in terms of like impact on the field, he's all over the place. And then that safety room is a lot of fun because you've got experience coming back. You've got depth, and then the new boy Fagans Eric Winters combo is just one I'm really excited about.
Have you sort of got new boy penciled in as a nickel?
Yes, I think that's a good home for him. I think that's a home that makes a lot of sense. You can move some guys around. I think there are some opportunities to play like a pure corner there at times, but I like new boy a lot at nickel. And I just go back to, again, this is anecdotal for sure, but I go back to when he was in high school, watched him in a state playoff game against Auburn High, and he was playing outside corner, just locking up like all state receivers at Auburn. And he's a safety. He was a safety by trade and doing that. It was just, no, we got to put him on the best guy out here. And so that's where I think when you have that kind of do it all ability, that nickel makes a lot of sense for him.
Yeah, and you mentioned corners a little while ago. Talk about them, because that's probably.
It's your biggest question,
biggest
mark.
Question on the defensive side of the ball.
It's by far the biggest question mark on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, and it's no surprise. Last season, you know, you had two guys that were far and away your most played guys. Now, they didn't have awesome seasons, but they had a lot of experience, and now they're in the SEC, going to be top corners there. It's a lot of just you're banking on people to take a step forward pretty quickly. Rashawn Pleasant, if he can cut down on the penalties, I think Rashawn Pleasant has the potential to be a good corner in this league.
Oh, I agree.
Obviously, very disruptive. That's the one thing about DeMarcus Van Dyke and his cornerback room and what this defense is. Very disruptive. Like, these are big physical corners, get their hands on the ball, try to force turnovers. That's going to be kind of the brand moving forward, and I think Pleasant fits in really, really well with it. Andre Jordan had some really impressive stuff last season. I know UCLA was terrible, but you look at his numbers Ohio State, Indiana, USC, when you talk about first-round wide receiver talents and the national champions, played his best ball in all those games. Like, was barely targeted, didn't give up a whole lot. He's the type of guy that I think can really step up. It's just, okay, new team, new scheme, what does he do there? And then I think a lot of hinges this year on how fast Blake Woodby goes. Like, if Blake Woodby, which I think he does, has the potential to be a starting quality cornerback in the SEC rather quickly, it changes so much for this defense, because it's a young guy that you can rely on early. His numbers in limited reps last year, played about a dozen snaps in like 7 or 8 games last year. his numbers are really good. Mm-hmm. He played really well, and he had a great spring.
Well, I mean, look who he was behind. I mean, Auburn.
Right.
Auburn
exactly. They didn't need him.
You know, Rayshon Pleasant was maybe the number three or four guy last year, and that Blake was behind him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and I think Woodby's that guy, and then that's if that's your top three corners, you feel like that's pretty good. You're going to need more. Yes. DVD wants to play at least four and rely on four, and so that means
like
you're going to go with somebody who you Fred don't Gaskin know a whole lot about.
Is he a safety?
He's a safety.
Who's the
Gavin Jenkins?
He had
a really impressive spring.
He's a long corner.
Big long corner, the type of guy that they really like. Shamar Arnaud was not healthy in the spring. He's going to have to tighten some things up. But he played a decent bit of ball last year at Florida State.
But he also got mentioned a couple of times, too. So that's something when a coach just, without prompting, mentions somebody's name.
Those are the two guys that I think I look at and say, okay, that's probably who you're going to end up with as like the best contenders for that playing time there at corner. But what can you get quickly from a guy like Scrap Richardson? I know he played FCS ball last season. Is Kamari Todd a guy that you can at least throw out there and trust because he's played some college football in the past, like, and was pretty good at the FCS level? Like, that's the one where it's like, if you want to trust four corners on this team this upcoming season, you're already banking on Blake Woodby to take that step.
Oh, yeah.
You're already banking on two guys who haven't been starting cornerbacks in the SEC to be that type of player. And you're just going to have to find somebody at that fourth spot. You're just going to have to develop them. Somebody's going to have to emerge. And that's a big question mark. I think the safety is going to help them out. I think the nickel position is going to help them out. Linebacker's obviously good. Edge rusher's got potential to be strong.
But the edge rushers need to be able to step up and get after the quarterback to be able to help the corners out.
Correct. And, you know, like the defensive line as well. But that's the cornerback and offensive line are the two position groups on this team where I look at and say, I see the thought process. I see the plan. I see the build for the future. That's going to be your question marks right now. And, like, a lot's going to hinge on how quickly they come together and how well they play. If they click and you got those pieces, I think Auburn could be better than expected this year. If they play as kind of like up and down, like you might expect from a group with a lot of inexperience and haven't played together a lot, that's where I think, you know, a lot of this can swing. But, you know, that's kind of the thing. Even the best teams have question mark positions. I think for Auburn, though, with so many new pieces, those are the two spots where it's like those are the clear question marks on this team.
One thing that makes you feel a little bit better about it is, I mean, DJ Durkin's defenses don't generally get toasted a lot.
They don't. The last couple of seasons they've had defense.
Everybody's going to give up some big plays occasionally.
Especially this day and age.
But some give up a lot.
Yeah, and I think the one saving grace for that DB room these last few years, even when they weren't at their very best, like last season when they gave up some big yards to some big teams, the one saving grace is they've been elite at stopping the run. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing that I talked about last week, you know, when we did our mailbag. Like, one of the most interesting things I saw digging into defenses on teams that Alex Golish has coached at the college level is he's usually pairs well with really good aggressive defensive fronts that stop the run and establish that line of scrimmage. So if Auburn can do that again, I think they're in a good spot. And I think they have the potential to do so. People are going to be like, well, how do you do that without Keldrick Falk? How do you do that without Keyron Crawford on the edge? How do you do that without like Malik Blockton and some of the other guys? And I get that and I understand it. I also think the last two seasons we've had the exact same questions
Absolutely.
About the defensive line room, and they just figure it out. And they've got depth, and they've got the pieces, and they're a fun group. And I also think when it comes to defensive tackle especially, more and more people are starting to get plugged in, I think, outside of Auburn about Cody Sigler. Bill Connolly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bill Connolly had his on ESPN had his SEC SEC breakdown earlier this week, and one of his seven or eight favorite transfers in the league this year was Cody Sigler.
Yeah, he had Byron Brown and Cody Sigler on his list.
Yeah, and it speaks volumes.
Cody's a guy that, I mean, has worked his way up. Was it West Alabama to Arkansas State, and now?
But Bill made a good point, and I think we saw this during spring ball this year as well. If you're knocking on 300 pounds in that range, and you get into the backfield, and you can make plays, you can do some of everything, you're already a rare talent. It's just a matter of bringing that to the SEC level, which, I mean, I think he's fully capable of doing. I mean, he it's one thing for a guy to like show out at the group of five level, and it's like, all right, let's see what you got in the SEC. From day one, it was like, this dude is doing it. Like, this dude's
We heard it from every, it seemed like every defensive first player practice, we talked every the, single time. Cody Sigler.
He was
from
the
offensive
first,
guys, yes.
He was the first guy that Golish mentioned on the first day of practice mm-hmm. about, like, who was standing out. Like, that's, it's different. It's a very special player.
Well, he's a guy, I just feel like Alex Golish really sort of relates a little bit to him because mm-hmm. of where he's, you know, his path that he's taken and how hard he's had to work, and that's what Cody Sigler is all about. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, Auburn Opelika, this is
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here on this Thursday. Fun show. It's moved along rather quickly. Let's see. Auburn has added another player, baseball transfer through the portal, picking up left-handed pitcher Dane Burns from Mississippi State, 6'5 lefty who was 2-1 with a 3.52 ERA this past year. For his career, 2 years at Mississippi State, 3.72 ERA with 51 strikeouts and 38 and two-thirds innings. So, nice to get a big lefty with a nice strikeout to innings pitched ratio. So the news continues. It has been a busy last few days. I mean, things going on in just about everything. Quickly, I want you to sort of recap for people the Narcisse Ngoi thing. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. Haven't really mentioned it this hour. He was drafted last night, but don't be concerned, mm-hmm. Auburn fans.
Yeah, he was drafted in the 57th pick he was a second round pick in the draft. He wasn't really expecting to get drafted. He was drafted by the Clippers. He says him and his agent have both said on the record he intends to play for Auburn. He's supposed to be here next week, according to a couple of people I talked to earlier in the week. But yeah, for Narcisse Ngoi, just a weird set of circumstances. European guys have been able to get drafted and stashed with their draft rights for years. They've just never been able to also play college basketball at the same time. Narcisse Ngoi was entered into the NBA draft because of his age. Mm-hmm. He's about to be 22. He turns 22 next month. So he never declared for the draft, which makes him still eligible. He just got his rights thing. So he is kind of the guinea pig of a brand new way of going things. This is probably just going to be the wave moving forward now in college basketball. If you get these European guys, if they're old enough, teams might be able to take a flyer on them with these picks, stash them, let him continue developing the college game, then negotiate his contract later. But, like I said, he is supposed to be on campus here soon. And, you know, he has said publicly now a couple times that he intends to play at Auburn next season.
And as you said, take it as a compliment, Auburn fans.
A great compliment.
You've got somebody that an NBA team
already thinks he's worth spending a draft pick on, which is a pretty good sign.
Ferg, before we run out of time and you head out on vacation, let everybody know, you know, what's coming up. And who all's handling it?
Yep, auburnobserver.com. You can check out a ton of stuff this week. We did corners. We talked about, we had the mailbag, the Nicole Auerbach podcast. We did recruiting, all that fun stuff. Next week, we've got, Tahad Pettiford breakdown. We've got a SEC football talent transfer story. We've got a column from Justin Lee. We've got two Dan Peck podcasts all at the Observer. I'm heading out right now.
Have a great vacation.
Yeah. Appreciate you, too.
One more day before I do it. Back tomorrow. Brian Matthews is back for a second time. We'll see how that goes. Join us tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We're out of here.